All right. Good morning, everyone. Good morning. Good morning. Does everybody have the source pack? They're here. Okay. Got it. Okay. So we'll get started, and we'll by the time we get into things, hopefully everything will be over. So good morning. Good morning. I'm sure that we're still all kind of processing and unpacking a little bit of what it is that's we've been experiencing, what we've been seeing. You know, Baruch Hashem, the incredible part about starting each our day, every day with Torah, is it's reminiscent of the words of David HaMelech. David HaMelech says, "Lulei sarascha shashuai azavarati ba'anyi." Kadosh Baruch Hu, had I not had the Torah, the delight of your Torah, azavarati ba'anyi, I would have literally again just been lost in my sorrow, right? Been lost in my suffering. And part of the beauty of what Torah gives us is Torah gives us an anchor. All too often in life, we just assume that Torah is just a series of do's and don'ts. Tells us what we're supposed to do, not do, kasher, right, kasher, treif, tamei tar, mutar, aser. But the truth is, I think as we kind of plumb the depths of Torah a little bit more, we begin to recognize that Torah gives us our soul, Torah gives us life, Torah gives us direction, Torah gives us a sense of purpose. And, you know, what we saw, so much of what we saw yesterday were like lives and worlds turned upside down. And you wonder, like, how does a person retain their footing when everything just has been literally pulled out from under them? Pulled out from under them. And there are many answers, but kind of all of those answers really coalesce in this one concept of Torah. Torah means many different things. Torah doesn't just mean the act of learning of Torah as we're doing right now. It's the learning of Torah. It's the living of Torah. It's the breathing of Torah. So I think it's really beautiful that we begin every single morning with a little bit of learning to ground ourselves, to anchor ourselves, knowing then whatever we encounter over the course of the day, and we know it'll be dramatic and we know it'll be overwhelming, but Torah is that great anchor that keeps us tethered to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that keeps us tethered to one another, that keeps us tethered to Am Yisrael, keeps us tethered to Eretz Yisrael, and that keeps us tethered, Emirat Hashem, to the Nitzchios of Klal Yisrael. So let's continue. So yesterday, we kind of laid the groundwork, and we are making great progress through the packet. So don't worry. They're coming. They're coming down. I think Shani went in different rooms. So, well, by the time hopefully we get into the sources, I apologize. So we laid the groundwork a little bit yesterday for what we'll call the identity ambiguity of Esther Hamalka, right? And how it is that from the beginning, again, both from her name, is she Esther, is she Hadassah? Remember, again, a quick review. What do we see from the Gemara? Is she Esther, is she Hadassah? What's the answer? Right? Both. Good morning. Both. Right? The truth is, one of them we know.
And they're bringing him down.
Perfect. Okay, great. Thank you, Shani. Thank you. One of them we know is a given name, and one of them we know is an ascribed name, right? One of them ultimately, again, is, or I should say, a given name an identity name versus a circumstantial name. We saw she doesn't have parents. So she's lacking name identity. She's lacking parental identity. So let's kind of go in this a little bit more. Take a look at number 7. And again, these are things, you know, sometimes, you know, the difficulty with Megillas Esther is because we all know the story. So we know how it begins. We know how it ends. A lot of times when you know a story in its entirety, you don't pay that much critical attention to the details. So I always say, like, whenever you learn any one of these stories, pretend like you're seeing it for the first time. So take a look at number 7. Page 1, source 7. Ubagia tor Esther bas Avichael dod Mordechai, asher lekach lo lebas, lavo al hamelach, lo biksha davar, kiem es asher yomar hegai sris hamelach shomer hanoshim, vati Esther nosas chaim beinei kol ro'eha. So remember, again, here the Miguel talks about the idea that, now fast forwarding a little bit, already at this point in time, what we are focused on over here, I'll take it. Okay. What we're focused on over here is incredible. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, great. Thank you. All right, so what we're focused on over here, just while we're handing out the thing. Oh, you need that chair? So that we go way back. All right. So as you were saying, so now in source in source number 7. Thank you. In source number 7, so we fast forward a little bit. So remember, again, we went from source number 1, which is our first introduction to Esther Malka, and now in source number 7, she's already been taken to the king's palace, part of the beauty pageant. Part of the beauty pageant. The Torah, so the Megillah says something interesting. That when it came Esther's time to be with the king, lo biksha davar, she didn't ask for anything. She didn't ask for anything. The only thing she had is kimas asher yomar Hegai Sris HaMelech Shomer HaNoshim, except what Hegai, the king's chamberlain, the guard of the woman, would say. So in other words, every woman, before she was with Achashverosh, she could ask for whatever she wanted. I don't know, clothing, perfume, whatever it is that she wanted, she would have. They asked Esther, what do you want? And Esther said nothing. Esther said nothing. Now, what's the pshat? Take a look at number 8. So the Al-Sheikh writes, here's the marriage, the Al-Sheikh writes, Akim lo biksha davar kim as asher amar hagai, shahai sekanusa shik shetena bal karcha. So the Al-Sheikh understands over here that this was Esther's way, bless you, of objecting to this entire process. She was saying, I'm not going to be a party to this. Not going to be a party to this. She was taken against her will. And again, the Al-Sheikh explains, therefore, you want me to ask for something? What do you want to ask for? Clothing, for this, for that? She says, I don't want to be here. And the way I show that I don't want to be here and that I'm not a willing participant in this process is by refusing anything. The Al-Sheikh, but I'll just point out, carries out this motif throughout so much of the Megillah narrative. For example, we'll get later on that Esther never divulges familial information. Right? Achashverosh asks her, who are you? Where are you from? She doesn't divulge anything. Al-Sheikh also understands that this was her form of objection. Right? She was powerless not to be brought to the king. Remember again, Esther doesn't go to Achashverosh. Esther is brought to Achashverosh. So she is powerless, so to speak, to refuse the process, but she's not going to participate in any way which has the appearance of her consent. That's the Al-Sheikh. If you turn the page in number 9, so this is incredible. So this is the Ri Nachimash, or Nachimiyash, one of the lesser-known commentaries on the Megillah. He writes, Lo biksha davar lahakel al shomreha. This is so incredible. How would you translate that phrase? Lahakel al shomreha? To make it easier for who? For those regarding, for like her handlers, her handlers, right? Shomer literally means those guarding her. So it's incredible. So in number 9, the source explains Esther doesn't want to ask anything. Why? Esther doesn't want to be a trouble. She doesn't be matriach anyone. She doesn't need anyone to do anything for her. What do you think about that approach? Or how do you understand that approach?
Sounds Jewish,
right? Doesn't want to put anyone out. It's good. Okay.
Usually when you ask something of someone, you're beholden to them. So maybe she doesn't want to owe anyone anything or be beholden to them.
100%. Beautiful. So in other words, it could be just, right, the good Yiddish Mama thing. It could be, you know, there's a concept of Soni Matanos Yichya. People who despise gifts live a long time. Chazal's understanding is there's no such thing as a gift you get for free. Everything you get comes with expectations. Everything you get comes with strings attached. So it could be Esther's like, I don't want to be beholden to anyone. Good, what else?
I'm thinking of Rachel, the woman who made cookies for Rachamah's captor who survived.
Yeah, and what?
Right.
So, in other words, maybe this is Esther already trying to kind of gain the favor of the people around her. Absolutely, absolutely. Any other thoughts? The truth is, I think also part of the narrative is if we go with this idea of an Esther whose name is not clear, whose identity is not clear, Chazal could also be painting a picture for us of someone who doesn't feel entitled to anything. Sometimes the reason people don't ask, right? We see this all the time. A person needs help with something. Sometimes people don't ask for help. Why don't people ask for help? Why don't people ask for help? Oh, wow. Okay, Baruch Hashem. And I don't think they deserve it, right? On the most basis. So sometimes it's pride. But a lot of times it's an incredible thing to see. People don't think that they're deserving of anything better than their current compromised circumstances. My life is difficult. My life is overwhelming. Okay, this is, you know, zechelki. This is it. And they don't realize that, no, you might be undergoing difficult circumstances, but your life doesn't have to be like this. You could ask for help and things could be different. It could be that Esther is a young woman without this sense of self. So again, we don't know her name. We don't know her parents. And now she's in a predicament. She's in it, and that's putting it mildly. That's putting it mildly. Yes?
Is there a significance that it does mention Esther Bas Avichai here?
Oh, excellent. Yes, yes, it absolutely does. By the way, it's Bas Avichai and Dod Mordechai. So it's actually, it's excellent. Tara, great. It's actually two pieces. In other words, here, the Megillah itself is ascribing identity. And I think what's unfolding over here is as follows. There is this incredible contrast that the Megillah develops between how Esther looks at herself versus how the reader views this woman. You see, the reader has the advantage of knowing the end of the story, right? So when I say Esther, you say? Great, right? I'm sorry? Hamalka. In other words, it's fascinating, right? That when we think about Esther, we think about heroine, we think about queen, we think about strength, we think, because we know the end of the story. And it's almost as if the Megillah is giving us like that literary foreshadow a little bit, saying, by the way, this person is great. But yet with all of that, there's the Esther as we see her, and then there's the Esther as she sees herself. And the Esther as she sees herself is weak, compromised, identityless, not deserving of anything. So even you have this guy, a guy who's essentially he's the palace eunuch. He's in charge of the harem. And he's like, what do you want? What do you want? She nothing. Nothing. Again, so it could be the Alshik's conscientious objection to this. Or it could be, again, the Rina Chimash saying she doesn't even feel she deserves it. Okay, so now let's continue a little bit longer, a little bit on. So what happens? So go to number 10. So remember, let me just give you the background to 10, 11, 12, 13. And this kind of, we're gonna bring this all to a head. So remember, fast forward a little bit more, Esther's chosen. Esther's chosen, I don't mean to give away the story, right? But Esther is chosen as the queen. Esther, despite the fact that, remember, Ahasuerus knows nothing about her, right? Just to point out, by the way, our next Chizuk Mishnah, maybe just our next year. We're focusing on Esther right now, but there's a psychological profile to be made for every single one of the characters in the Megillah. And Ahasuerus is probably the most fascinating out of all of them. You want to talk about what it means to live life with low self-esteem, right? To always gravitate to the person who's just going to give you praise no matter how empty it is, and how without that sense of self and strong self-esteem, you make the most ridiculous life decisions because you think they're going to get you popularity. Ahasuerus marries a woman who he doesn't even know her name. He doesn't know where she comes from. Because if you're Ahasuerus, this is your Eshes Chayil. Right? Why? She's no threat. Right? She's no competition. She's a nothing. Right? And that's the great irony of the story, right? Ahasuerus thinks that he married like a wallflower, right? He's just, whatever, she's not going to do anything. She'll look beautiful on my arm, and that's it, nothing else. So in any event, so now remember, come to source number 10. At this point now, remember that Haman's decree against Klal Yisrael has now become known. So Mordechai sends word to Esther that she needs to go to Ahasuerus. And you know the story. Esther in number 10 sends back. Now here's what's interesting. In number 10, Esther sends back a message to Mordechai. The message is, everyone knows that if you go to the king without being summoned, what's going to happen? You're executed. So what was Esther's answer to Mordechai when Mordechai asked her to go and beseech on behalf of Klal Yisrael to the king? What was her answer?
I haven't been summoned,
which is a nice way of saying... No. This is very important to understand. Esther says no. Now, she doesn't say no straight out. You know, we've all had conversations like this where you ask someone for something and they give you like an entire literal like Megillah. And you're like, That's a no, right? Right? That's a no. I just want to be clear. So kind of that comes from Esther, right? So Esther says no, but she doesn't just say no. She says no in the course of three different psukim. So it's dangerous. You can't go, but effectively she says no. Okay. Number 11. So Vayomer Mordechai l'Hashiv el Esther. So this is incredible. Mordechai says to Esther, Al tedabi ben avsheich li malik beis ha-melech mikol ha-yudim. Ki ma'charish tacharishi ba'es hazos, revach v'atzala yamol yudim imakom acher, v'at ubeis avich tovedu, umi yodea im la'is kazos higat l'malchus. So there's a lot. So let's unpack this in number 11, because this is pretty incredible. So first of all, what's striking about number 11? What's striking about this? About Mordechai's response to Esther? Literally, again, you can see the English over here. Do not imagine to yourself that you will escape in the king's house from among all the Jews. If you remain silent at this time, relief and rescue will arise for the Jews from elsewhere, and you and your father's household will perish. Who knows whether at a time like this you will attain the kingdom? Mordechai is giving Esther multiple messages. What are they? Number one. I'm sorry?
Don't think you're
going
to escape.
So number one, don't think you're going to escape this. This is incredibly important, and I think this resonates with such profundity on this trip and in the time that we're living. Klal Yisrael has a shared fate. We have a shared fate. There's no such thing as a Jew who has a different fate than the collective. Now again, we all experience different things. But Mordechai says to Esther, let's be clear. If Klal Yisrael is annihilated, Chas v'Shalom, so are you. You might think you're the queen. You might think you're safe. You might think that you're fine. But at the end of the day, whatever happens to us, happens to you. There is a shared and intertwined fate for all of Klal Yisrael. You know, we see this now, and I think we especially, as American Jewry, could relate to this in an overwhelming, dramatic way, right? Because if you think about it, you know, Jews generally are the ones who are at the forefront, especially of every progressive cause, of everything else, and it comes from a good place. It's because we know what it's like to be an oppressed minority. So whatever it is, in all of woke culture and everything, you always had Jews at the forefront. And how overwhelming has it been to see so many of those progressive movements turn against us during this incredible and overwhelming time for Klal Yisrael. And it's jarring. And you'll see something amazing that even other streams of Judaism, right? That again, sometimes we're even a little bit harsher in their rhetoric towards the state of Israel. Even sometimes other streams that were a little bit more, again, now suddenly everyone is realizing that what? We have a collective fate. You know, I don't know if some of you saw, we're able under the direction of APAC to actually put out a letter to a number of rabbis in the community, to put out a letter to Chris Van Hollen, right? About calling out his ridiculously one-sided, blatant anti-Semitic and anti-Israel position. And it was incredible because it was a letter that was co-authored by different rabbis of different streams. How does that happen? It happens because Mordechai says, we now, in times of difficulty, we recognize we have one shared fate. We have one shared fate. All of Klal Yisrael, we're in the same boat. How you practice, how you believe, how you interpret your Judaism, I don't want to say it's immaterial, but it's immaterial for the shared plight of Klal Yisrael. So Mordechai says to Esther, number one, Esther, please, don't think you're safe. Good. Number two, what else does it say to Esther? What's message number? Yes.
It seems like you vowed to sacrifice yourself for the sake of
others. Oh, so this is incredible also. And this is incredible. And this is this theme that we see in Megillas Esther over and over and over again. Esther, there are always individuals who have to sacrifice themselves for the collective. You know, a lot of times we look at the word sacrifice, and like for us, sacrifice is a bad word. You know, what's our goal? Our goal in life is you want to have your cake and eat it too. I was having a conversation with someone last week. He said, no. Where some of this expression came up, he said, my goal is I want to have my cake, eat it too, and then have another slice for later, right? That's what I want.
And not get fat.
Good. Okay. So for us, sacrifice is a bad word. Sacrifice is not a bad word. Sacrifice is the word. Sacrifice is the mantra of our people. There is no Klal Yisrael without sacrifice. We might think about this. We're learning Torah now. There's no Torah without a Moshe Rabbeinu. What did Moshe Rabbeinu have to sacrifice to become the right hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to bring the Torah down from Shemayim to earth? He sacrificed everything. He sacrificed his marriage. He sacrificed his children. He sacrificed everything. Now again, we're not called upon to make those kind of sacrifices. But sacrifice is absolutely part of the responsibility of every single member of Klal Yisrael, each in our own way. So yes, Mordechai is telling Esther, get ready to sacrifice. And we're going to see, he's telling Esther to get ready to maybe make the ultimate sacrifice. Good. What else is he telling her?
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I'm sorry if I'm misunderstanding it. So if you remain silent this time, someone else will save the Jews and your family will die?
Oh, so let's divide that up into two pieces. Lesson number three is, salvation is never dependent on any one person. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not need any of us in order to actualize his divine plan. The great part about HaKadosh Baruch Hu is he could do anything and everything without us. The Ribono Shel Olam gives us the privilege of partnering with him to make dramatic things occur. It's a privilege. It's a privilege. It's not necessity. So Mordechai says to Esther, if you don't want to act, that's fine. That's fine. You don't have to act. Salvation is not dependent on you. If you don't act, someone else will be the architect of salvation. Now, as well, I just mentioned, what about the last part? But then he says, but if you don't act, Hare atu beisavich tovedu, you and your father's home will perish. Well, let's read it together with Umi Yodea im lais kazo segat malchus. For who knows, maybe this is your moment that you became queen. So how do you understand that last phrase? Right, so on one hand, Mordechai is saying is, Esther, it's almost like the, what's the expression for it? Like when you tell someone, no, we don't really need you. We really need you. No, let me do it. You know, like he tells Esther, reverse psychology, right? Reverse psychology. It's almost like he tells her, passive aggressive, right? He goes, Esther, we don't need you. It's okay. If you don't want to do it, don't worry about it. Right. We will go ahead and Revav Atzala, salvation will come from somewhere else. But if you don't do it, you and your family will perish because who knows, maybe this is the moment you became queen. So there's a lot to unpack over here.
I think he's saying like what you were just saying before, like from Hashem's perspective, Hashem will get this done. Somehow, like that's like on a national level, but like on a personal level, like this could be your moment. And
beautiful.
He's like guilt tripping her.
But really for herself.
For herself, right?
You might have to have the moment of your lifetime
if you don't act now. Right. Absolutely.
Maybe because she had that like identity crisis, he's mm-hmm. kind of like you've been searching your whole life for like who you are. Like this right. is it.
This is it. Beautiful.
In the sacrifice, she does. She loses her husband, and she loses a legacy. She doesn't have children who are going to be Jewish. So, I mean, grandchildren, whatever. She doesn't have a continuation. But in the Megillah, in essence, like giving us this Megillah, she has eternity. Like, and in essence, she becomes like Rachel. She becomes the mother of all Jews because. So that's her legacy. Like, that becomes
beautiful.
Sacrifice.
Beautiful. So let me bring all, incredible. Let me bring all of these. We should do this every day. Somebody has to sponsor breakfast though. You know? So if we bring this all together, because I think all of the, right on point, there's a beautiful Malbim, and I apologize that I didn't put it on the sheet. The Malbim really seizes on this phrase, Umi Yodea, Im lais kazos higat lemalchus. Who knows, maybe this is the moment for which you became queen. And the Malbim says something, and for me, I think this is like one of the most overwhelming ideas. The Malbim says that sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts a person in the world to accomplish one thing at one moment. And sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings about multiple generations just to bring about one person to accomplish one thing in one moment. And the scary part is, if you miss your moment, if you miss your moment, you run the risk of denying meaning to your own life and to potentially the generations before you. There's nothing like starting the day with a lot of pressure, right? But Mordechai is saying, Esther, listen, Esther, you could act, you cannot act. I can't force you, right? She's the queen, he's not. So you could choose not to go. And there are plenty of good reasons not to go. But Esther, you ever think about like how it could be that an anonymous girl becomes the queen? You ever wonder to yourself, like we were saying before, you've always wondered, who am I? Am I Esther? Am I Hadassah? I never met my parents. You ever go through life wondering, like, what am I doing here? What's my point? Esther. Now, miyodea. Now, by the way, what does miyodea mean? Who knows? See, it's interesting. What doesn't Mordechai say?
I know.
Right? Mordechai doesn't say, Esther, this is your moment. He doesn't say that. Why doesn't he say it? So number one, if you want her to realize it, why else doesn't he say it? X and Y else? Because he doesn't know. Understand something. Megillas Esther is the first book of Tanakh written after the close of the prophetic era. There is no Nevuah in Megillas Esther. There is no Navi. There is no communication from God to Mordechai or to Esther. The profundity of the Megillah is people being faced with difficult life situations and having to figure it out. So Mordechai, remember, was one of the members of the Anshei Knesset Gedolah, one of the men of the Great Assembly, which means that he lived during the era of prophecy and saw now that there was no prophetic intervention. So if you're Mordechai, you're waking up every single morning, going to sleep every single night, just hoping that God is going to speak to you and tell you what is going on, what's the play, what's the plan. So now Mordechai confronts Esther, and again, especially if you understand that he's talking to his wife, or at least the woman who was his wife, right? And understand, he's telling her, this may be your moment. I don't know if it is, I don't know if it's not. But if this is your moment and you miss it, salvation will come from elsewhere, but you'll deny meaning to yourself and potentially the generations who came before you. But if this is your moment, then maybe at the end of the day, you finally find that identity you're looking for. Maybe now suddenly you're no longer Miss Ambiguity. Now you're no longer Hadassah Esther, but maybe you become one of them. Maybe you're no longer the parentless child, but now you carve out your identity for your own. It's such a profound, and understand just, you know, it goes back to what we said yesterday. When Mordechai tells Esther, understand that without getting into all the halachic complexities of it, when Mordechai tells Esther to go to Ahasuerus, according to the narrative that they were married, this would be forever the severing of the marital bond between Mordechai and Esther. Because up until this point in time, Esther never initiated an encounter with Ahasuerus. So as such, again, technically speaking, she would still have been permitted to her husband Mordechai. If she goes and she initiates an encounter with Ahasuerus, it changes everything. So just understand like how loaded all of this is. So Mordechai, so you understand what's happening over here? Mordechai is the leader of the Jewish people. So how is a leader of the Jewish people? You have to decide between the nation and your wife. You have to choose between Klal Yisrael and your marriage. Esther has to choose between her personal well-being and her people. This is the story of Klal Yisrael. The constant choices, the constant back and forth. So what happens? Yes, please.
I'm sorry, back to the Miodea question.
Yes.
So could it also be that if that in itself is like a lesson, because we can never assume that this is my moment. Like, that would yes. Be us.
so much, and it's not up to us to say, like, okay, I've accomplished, I'm here, I served my purpose in this world, now I'm, like, off.
100%. So, actually, thank you for bringing me back to that. You know, I will tell you, Rabbi Soloveitchik, we're going to talk, we're going to hopefully do a piece by the Rav this morning as well. Rabbi Soloveitchik actually sees like this, that one of the messages of Megillas Esther in a general sense is we are still living in the same post-prophetic era, right? And every single day we're faced with like, mi odea, is today my... And by the way, this to me is like one of the scariest things in life. Because you think to yourself, I don't know, like, did I miss my moment? Did I not miss my moment? The good news is, for Esther HaMalka, maybe she had a moment. Life doesn't usually work this way. For us, I find that most of us have multiple moments. Right? It's not just one. It's not just one. And even, by the way, even Esther, I just want to point out, just not to ruin the story, right? But the Jews survive and Baruch Hashem and thrive. And Esther does have a son, right? Esther has a son, Darius, who actually is responsible for commissioning the rebuilding of the second Beis HaMikdash. So it's Esther and Ahasuerus' offspring who actually rebuilds the second Beis HaMikdash. So it is just incredible to note that even Esther HaMalka, this was a major moment, but Dharma was, but 100% Shani's point is so incredible. We don't know our moments, but this is why in life it is so important to be able to live with eyes wide open. How often do we go through life and there are moments that present themselves, moments of incredible accomplishment, personal accomplishment, national accomplishment, and so often we're like too busy, too distracted, diffuse the tension, we'll get to it later, and you hear Mordechai kind of whispering in your ear, Mi yodea im la'is kazo segat l'malchus. Maybe this is your moment. Don't let the incredible moments of life pass you by. Now, what's incredible? Please.
October 7th was that moment when it was so incredible to me that there are so many heroes, and I'm assuming you're meeting many of them, when so many people at once were called up to their moment, mm-hmm. and so many, you know, came into rescue, or the, you know, people who have changed their lives and the people who are speaking out and so forth. I think like Hashem like shook up the world. Said, okay, here's a time for moments. Everybody, you know, here's like the call. A lot of people got the call, and a lot of people risen to the right. to the moment.
It's incredible. Maybe even like to follow up on that a little bit. You know, what we'll have to talk about in hopefully in future shiurim as well is there's what happens in the moment, right? When you seize that moment, and then there's how you take that moment and kind of extend it forward. You know, what do you do after that moment has passed? How does that moment kind of shape your life and shape the lives of those around you going forward? So something, but it's a beautiful, beautiful safa. Let's do it. Let me know when we're...
Actually, I'm just going to give you a note. We have to stop.
Oh, okay.
Because they have to change the schedule a little bit. We have to take a break now to get ready to go because she's running a little bit late. And then she's going to start at like 9:15.
Okay. So we'll stop. Okay, so we're stopping. Okay, both my wife and the executive director told me we're stopping. So that's it. That's it. It's like a Beis Din. We will stop over here for today, Meretz Hashem. So everybody will have it. So 15-minute break now, and then we'll, in this room, we reconvene. Perfect. All right. Shkayach, everyone.
Rabbi Silver is like Mima Koma there.